All right, you guys. I'm Travis.
I'm Justin.
I'm Jesse.
And this is the Outrun Show. On this episode, we're talking about what makes coffee good. What's the difference between coffee that is not a craft and coffee that is artisan coffee, and some of our best coffee experiences. Talk about why we love jackets, why they're important. And our main topic today is about mobility and what exercises and stretches we're using, what are the faux pas, and what is the techniques that you need to have to enjoy doing parkour sustainably from a mobility perspective, and the only splits that you really need. Dun, dun, dun. And more on this episode of The Outrun Show.
Travis is wearing black.
What's that jacket?
I've got mine.
That's horchata cream.
Horchata, right. Horchata cream.
Never mind.
Like speckles.
Cinnamon speckles.
This is why I don't like
this zippers.
This
guy's got all sorts
zippers
of nice
do this.
Jackets.
Like, droop like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it makes the tud.
Yeah. So I hate zippers, dude.
What? Do you think are you coming fat?
I do like the half zip ones.
Like
that
gives you
start
cleavage.
From here.
Like it looks like you like have ghost boobs.
Like I have there. A bust.
Yeah.
Who are you gonna call?
Travis's bust.
Ghostbusters.
Unzip it. No, I just can't do it. Just unzip it all the way.
Just
yeah.
You know. I have a thing for jackets.
Now he looks like he's like wearing a mist cloak or something.
I do. I have a thing for jackets. A mist cloak. Okay. You guys, I really like nice. Assassin's Creed.
Got it.
Yeah. No, I was just about to say.
No, I like this jacket because it is very, like, future fashion.
Yeah, it does have a nice cut to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan.
I love jackets. I don't know why. I really like them.
Dude, I like them too because they're so portable. Both literally and like stylistically.
They're stylistic and they're
like
fine.
You can put them over like all sorts of things and try them out in new outfits. With, like wear a shirt, you have to put on a shirt and then you really just get to change pants.
So I really think jackets bring class to casual. Because if you're probably just wearing a t-shirt, it's kind of like, I mean, he only looks so good in a t-shirt. It's like wearing a t-shirt.
It's like wearing a suit without the suit jacket.
Oh.
Like you could wear that, but the suit jacket is really what pulls it all
yeah
together.
Just like a dress shirt with just dress pants, you're like, ah, buddy, you're kind of trying today.
Yeah, you kind of look like you're in like the early 2000s, like,
yes, right, exactly.
Then you throw on like a vest Dunder or something Mifflin. Like that, and then it's a little bit more like, I'm just too cool for the jacket.
Yeah, know? It's like
just the shirt, like just like dress shirt and pants, nah,
zippers suck. That's what
we're zippers suck.
Zippers suck.
Did you have an accident as a child? That
no,
you, okay,
did just
Justin doesn't wear
cleavage.
Jeans. That's true, actually. Justin doesn't wear jeans with zippers. If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
No. That's they have rock. A fake zipper.
I like
that. What's your, yeah, I guess I'm trying to think. You don't really wear jackets. Justin doesn't really wear jackets.
He does. He's got a couple of nice, really nice jackets.
Yeah, I mean,
he's got
bombers.
Like the army green one.
Like bombers. Is the way
yeah,
you go.
Bombers.
If you need a zipper, you can have a bomber. But
yeah, bombers.
Yeah,
really
the
stylish.
Zipper wrinkles. It's not going on me.
So you guys train with jackets on?
No.
Actually, that the track jacket that I have, or the coach's like track jacket one, that I have, that black one, that one's nice. It's buttons. So when I sit down, the folds between the buttons give it enough like play that it doesn't bubble
up
like that. It actually still lays flat. And of course, with the buttons, you can the top two, or you can even go from the bottom up so that it kind of like splits there instead of doing a
yeah, like a suit jacket.
Yes, basically. like some sort of like person with awful like spinal mobility or something like that.
Yeah. So that
it's kind of comfy.
Maybe in the future.
People
not happening in Colorado though.
So you want the Back to the Future jacket that like goes on loose and it's just like and then it dries you automatically.
I don't remember the Back to the Future jacket.
Yeah,
it's
Back
a while
to Future 2.
I watch those.
Yeah.
It's just not happening in Colorado, guys. Colorado
what?
Is never getting jackets like anything above outdoor casual.
Oh, you mean like the style?
Yeah, maybe Denver, but
no, it's
good. Oh, yeah, because like everybody wants it's their just like. Not happening. Yeah, they want their more like country jacket.
Yeah, people did move here to feel really casual. I feel like if you moved to Fort Collins, you moved to Fort Collins to be on vacation, like dress like you're on vacation every day.
Yeah, they're like, wait, Colorado's the state of athleisure wear. So I never have to dress up in Colorado.
Right. It's so true.
Especially if you like work in an office job because you just wear athleisure when you get there. And people are like, hey, you just get back from your run? You're like, yeah, I just ran here, actually. I just ran from my house. That's just part of my workout. It's to run to work, and then I work. And they're like, yeah, that's awesome. Good for you. Stay healthy.
There's an episode of Portlandia where this guy who's like always bragging about riding his bike and work and how much he rode, but he just like sweats through the entire office. It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, that's kind of why I had to.
That's kind of what happens, right?
You come in summertime, you get the back V sweat with the backpack.
Yeah, yeah. Biking to the gym, you just never stop sweating if you bike to the gym in summer.
Yeah,
it's with you all day.
Shower in the new gym.
Yeah, new gym updates.
Yeah,
windows.
Let's, windows, and they're really cool. They have black trim.
Yeah, like
great windows.
Walls are up. It's almost
glass.
It's,
they're see through.
It's almost fortified now, the building.
Almost fortified. Almost.
There's no garage doors yet.
Though. No garage doors yet. So. And so that's cool. I think that's the biggest update. I mean, some lighting selections, and we have almost got the parkour features nailed down for design. We're like 95% there, right? Did you say, Justin?
Yep. Yep, all the fabricators are hitting me up. Justin, we want it.
Yeah, there is.
Of course they want that project.
Yeah, of course they want that project.
Both cool and the lot.
We're so excited about it. We'd love to see a video from you.
Yeah, then there is the one guys who are like, so we're just doing the hand railing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely sent it to some fabricators and they never applied.
Yeah.
They were like, that looks like a lot of work.
They're like, no. It's definitely going to take somebody who's interested in doing business and interested in
the project
and the project.
Yeah,
exactly. Like someone like us.
What do you know?
So drinks, pseudo New Year's resolution update from Jesse, where we're talking about drinks and then sort of our casual topic, which people might not know about, is that so Jesse doesn't believe that cold coffee is coffee.
It's like, yeah, it's just not. It's not real coffee. Like, I'm not gonna say you're like less of a coffee drinker if you drink iced coffee. I'm just gonna say there's about 80% less love and skill put into your iced coffee than there is any of the other drink. Actually, I'm gonna go. It's 95% less skill. I've made thousands of iced coffee drinks, and I can assure you, I put less love into.
But it's
all
only
of them.
Half the equation, right? It's only they still do the shot. Right?
Yeah, they still do the shot.
So you're only talking
depending
about
on the iced coffee.
The milk, right?
Steaming the milk, adding syrup, making sure you get your layer of foam. I mean, steaming the milk and making the espresso is making coffee.
It is
that
the craft.
Is the craft.
It is the kung fu. It's like you don't have no kung fu if you're just like pour like the what are those things that not the Keurig but the other one where the other brand where you just stuff the latte into the machine. Like
yeah,
little cups.
Yeah, it's Keurig.
Like Keurig. Or what I can't remember the other one.
Espresso.
The espresso one where it's like, it steams the cup and then, I mean, that's soulless, right?
It looks kind of cool.
It does look soulless. Again, if your goal is just like, I just need to get a jolt of caffeine, that's fine. But I'm like there for the experience, right?
I mean, we have a little bit of Breve background, so we should explain to people a little bit about what's happening here with the coffee, so it doesn't make sense. So when you get coffee, you have a bean. The bean, just let this finish drinking coffee. This people need to know this. You have a bean. The bean is roasted. And so depending on how it's roasted.
We're skipping a couple of steps there to get to just the bean, but you're right.
Yeah. But these are the factors you're paying for. Like when you go into a store and you look at the Colombian roast versus an African roast or whatever, right? A bean, right? And then they're roasted by a person who's doing a craft, right? So the farmer has a craft as well. But there's also the next big step is the bean roaster. And some of you guys like brewers in the 90s, we have roasters in the thousands which is like their little side hustle craft. Like I have a buddy who has a roaster like in his house. And if you go to some fancy coffee shops, you'll see roasters in those places. They're roasting their beans and then they're grinding their beans to a degree or a grade that's best for the type of drink that's being made. And they're even roasting for an for a specific use. So they'll roast differently for espresso coffee versus drip coffee.
Yep.
And then they'll grind to different degrees for espresso versus drip. And then, so when you go in and you get something like a latte, like what's the craftiest of the crafty coffee drinks, would you say?
Cappuccino. That's cool. That's because you're paying the same price, but 50% of your drink is foam.
But you still have the steam milk.
Oh, yeah.
That's and you still have the, you have the espresso you could screw up.
Mm-hmm.
So there it takes an artisan. It takes a, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, not artesian.
Not an artesian, but artesian. But if you steamed it with artesian water, right, that'd be even more artisan.
Yeah.
So you've got this going on. So the reason that this, and sometimes even to some degree, I guess like lesser boutique coffee shops are looked at differently by coffee snobs is because their kung fu, their craft is not that well developed. The skill's not that well developed. They're literally using a machine and there's less care to that process. But if you go in, like, one of my favorite examples of this was when we tried these mochas down that spot in Denver next to the Denver Apex location. I cannot remember for life
the name of that place. It was just some dude's name. That's why. Right? It was like Jeff's Coffee or something.
Yeah.
Jeff's Beans.
It is. It was not Phil's Coffee, but it was some boutique shop. This dude in there were like, hey, can you make a mocha? And, you know, he looks like he works at like a chop house. Like he's got suspenders on. Mm-hmm. And he really cares about what he does. You can tell by his handlebar mustache. And he's going to make a mocha, which is chocolate, espresso, and steamed milk. And then usually like some flavoring, right? And so people think mocha. You might think McDonald's, which is probably just in a bag.
Literally like a hot cocoa powder mix. They just mix with hot water.
Yeah. And they mix hot water. And there's not, there at one point, there was something that was coffee in that. But it's more like space food or an MRE.
Is that it's like instant coffee stuff?
Yeah. Hyper processed. So this guy is like, here's how he does it. I just remember him doing it and just being like amazed by it. He takes the espresso, and when he's going to make the beans, right, to use the espresso machine, he puts chocolate, the dark chocolate, the awesome dark bar. Chocolate, yeah, the bar, in the cup on top of the espresso machine. So the heat from the espresso machine melts the chocolate down. Then he steams it. He gets his shots of espresso, which is a small amount of fluid. Okay, you guys, that's just like if you take an espresso shot. It's espresso, not expresso, even though you feel like you want to say that. Espresso. It's not espresso, it's espresso. And then he pours it in and uses a whisk, like a matcha whisk, to whisk the espresso in with the, you know, this awesome chocolate that was heated by the machine. And then he steams the milk, and then he adds it together, and you're just like, okay, you had it. And then he even added ice in that one. So I don't think he did steam the milk. But I would say that's the closest
one. He saw you, and he's like, this guy can't handle 140-degree water.
Yeah, I know, he needed that 120. We ordered ice, but he still did the same thing. So I think this was the closest one that might still be, I think, craft. I think that's still... Like there's some
artisans. Oh, you made it hot and then poured it over ice.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. See, and that's what I mean is that's like I just painted a picture, and now you're just gonna walk all
over. It's ketchup on steak, is what you feel like.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. You made this awesome drink, and then you put ice cubes, and you poured it over ice cubes.
It tastes better water, cold. Right?
Water doesn't belong in coffee.
Are you a scotch drinker?
Dude, things just taste better.
Dude, cool. $200 bottle of scotch, and you're going to pour it into like 6 cups of ice in a plastic cup. You know this is not okay.
Yeah, because right? You mute the flavors like that.
Do you guys know?
Yeah, the flavors of the pour.
Do you guys know what an Americano is?
You can also drink it way faster when it's cold.
You guys know what an Americano is?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like hot water and espresso.
Yeah.
That's a bit blasphemous too, to be honest.
To be called an Americano?
No, to take espresso and just like... beautifully curated coffee and just dump it in hot water.
Congratulations. You have any iced coffee drink. Yeah, that's my point.
Well, you have to drink it fast.
They took an espresso.
You drink it really fast.
And it's this artistry that people worked hundreds of years to refine
to figure out.
And figure out. And then somebody took boiling water and was like, here you go.
Yeah, I mean, the ordering the Americano, for me, the only thing that has value in it is that you know you've got enough caffeine.
But like, the flavor is better. I think the flavor is better than like a black coffee.
Really?
On an Americano. I think the drip
oftentimes is
but,
better.
Well, I like the flavor of espresso. Yeah, it's a little smoother, a little less sharp. But
you're right.
But it's like, yeah, if I want a black coffee, I just get a drip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to ruin some artist's work by putting boiling water on top of it.
It is a bit frustrating because I think that, like, you know, lattes, really, there's a huge spectrum. It is, I mean, younger people shouldn't be drinking or whatever on this podcast, but I doubt there's a bunch of super young people listening. You know, if you have a very fine whiskey or, you know, drink, you typically don't want to mix that with a bunch of other things to take away from the essence of the flavor. Like people are...
You use whiskey rocks and not, you put it on the rocks.
Right. You put a cold, if you want it cold, oh, there could be your answer.
The whiskey rocks?
You just need whiskey rocks in your cold lattes. Well, how would you settle on that?
That would be less affronting, yeah, for sure.
Just cold drink. You just need to drink
a glass. Dude, there's a product idea, though. I'm telling you. Is. Cold bro, drink. That is... What?
One go.
That's like... That's him and Angus's philosophy on drinking things. It's like, you get it, it's gone.
Dude, we were going to order Thai teas at restaurants. Go get Thai food, order Thai tea with Justin. You will reach over to grab your glass, and by the time it's to your lips, his is gone.
Yeah. It's fast.
Because it gets too watery. And it's enjoyed, things enjoyed faster are just better.
So why don't you like Sip and Savor is the model of Bindle of most coffee shops, not guzzle and gulp. That's a
guzzle and gulp.
That's a gas station.
Flavor only lasts a small window in time. Consume more. You only live so long.
Motto of the Midwest, right there.
Yeah, no, I have iced coffees, but yeah, so the update on my 2021 resolution is that iced coffees are going to be a hard one for me to branch out to once I've exhausted all the hot drink options.
So a reminder on that New Year's resolution was to every time you order something out, it has to be a different product, right? From a different place. And
well, yeah, the place doesn't have to be new. I can order from the same place, but the dish or drink has to be.
So what's the weirdest thing you've had over since the last podcast?
I haven't ordered out a lot actually this year, which is nice. Been pretty busy, but that tree line white mocha that you guys got me with oat milk was yeah, it wasn't bad, but oat milk leaves up like a taste in my mouth. It's something about the way that they sweeten those milks, like coconut milk or oat milk. Like if they would just leave them, they're kind of bitter, so they have to add like sweetener, but then they don't want to say that like it's got, you know, 30 grams of sugar, so they usually add like Splenda or sucralose or whatever it is, right? And then that always leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
I can't handle the artificial sweetener aftertaste.
I can't. And so it was not, it had a nice flavor. It was kind of smoky. It reminded me of like skiing, you know,
the dust, the tree line or whatever.
And then the aftertaste kind of reminded me of like that mushy snow that's like down by the lodge when you get out.
They usually don't like too crazy of flavors in coffee. I think the craziest I'd go is cayenne. Mexican mochas.
Ooh, Mexican mochas.
Mexican mochas. I'm saving some of those Seattle. Nice ones. So there's this joint in Seattle that's in the, what's the older shop district? I keep forgetting what it's called.
Pike's Peak?
Is that
Pike's
what it is?
Pike's Market?
Yeah, Pike's Place? Or
Pike's, yeah, something like that.
Something like that. You know, people know that. It's got like the bubblegum alley and junk like that. The first Starbucks is proximal to there.
It's like Pike's Market or something. Yeah, there
was another coffee shop that was a ways, you know, down. There was a couple coffee shops there, but I remember one coffee shop that we went to, and they had those Mexican mochas. It was the first time I had one, and I was just like, oh my gosh, that's up there with that.
On that trip was the first one. I think I remember that actually, because you would ask what a Mexican mocha was, and I jokingly told you that it had tequila in it.
I think I was like, well, I don't want it. But they were so amazing. I think that's up there as far as memory goes is like top probably three coffee experiences.
Yeah,
that one, that freaking mocha from the hipster in Denver. I'm sure I've got another one out there, but those are the two that really stick out.
Yeah, I love Mexican flavoring. Just like sucker, put chili on it. Margarita, put chili on it. Coffee, put chili in it.
Put chili in it.
I love it, man. Throw it all over the
the place. It's good.
Yeah. It's dangerous.
So, question today, mobility dogma and mobility for parkour. What does that even mean, mobility for parkour?
I would say it's mobility so that when you mess up, you can walk away from it.
So bulletproofing.
Bulletproofing.
It's a savings account for your joints.
Yep. Yeah. Bumper plates.
Bumper plates for your landings. Yes. Yeah. A lot of people out there are jumping with just those, like, iron plates for parkour. Yeah. Clank, clank, clank.
It's amazing how some people can avoid it for so long, having such little mobility. There's a lot of power, I feel like. I don't know if it comes from them being so tight, but...
It can.
I feel like that was definitely how I operated early on, was having a lot of tightness and being able to just bounce around on my tendons and how tight they are. But it felt like it comes back at you.
Certainly does. I describe mobility as like rowing like a kayak upstream. If you're not working on it, you are going backwards.
Yeah. Yep.
And when you're younger, you just start a little further upstream. You get a little like heads up. And then as you're growing, things are changing and adapting.
River's running a little bit lower. Yeah. A little slower.
Yeah. Eventually you get to like rapids and you're just fighting to keep any kind of ground on it. I think that one thing I'd like to call about mobility and parkour is that it's like a lot of other training methods where most people are going to say that it doesn't matter or they don't pay attention to it. Or if they do, it's just because of their own personal preference. But really, it's just taken somebody there's not been a ton of people who are super popular in parkour who are also amazing at being mobile. And I think once you see that happening and then people trying to say, oh, you know, why is this person so awesome? They're going to try and correlate and be like, okay, well, now I care about mobility. Also, anybody who's older, who's starting to feel to pay the price they've paid for jumping like that, they're going to do just enough, what they feel like is just enough mobility to stay out of pain.
Yeah.
I think, though, I mean, we kind of already have, like, some really rock star athletes that are pretty mobile. And I think most people who care about the sport, or at least about their performance in the sport on, like, an actual professional or elite level, already know that most of the, like, high-level athletes are going to be mobile to a certain degree, right? But... for me, it's a trade-off between, like, what is it that you want? Because if it is performance that you want, you have to remember that parkour comes in a lot of flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And only one of those flavors is direct competition, right? So unless that's your flavor, that's your Mexican mocha.
Mm-hmm.
Chasing that, like, that high performance... it's just not worth it, right? Now, if your other flavor is like, well, I want to be injury prevention,
mm-hmm.
then you can dive in on the mobility side and really focus on that and really increase the range of motion on your joints and really kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, bulletproof those joints. Then that's awesome. That benefits you. If your other flavor is stylistic, then mobility serves almost no purpose for you other than just staying healthy, right? And then I guess maybe if your style, it requires more range of motion. But for the most part, like, you have to balance how much time it's going to take for you to get that extra mobility, right? Like, just for you to get extra range of motion in your ankles won't take you 6 weeks of, like, a mobility cycle. It will take you years of dedicated effort to get an extra inch of ankle dorsiflexion, depending on where you're starting, right? If you're already, like, moderately athletic, it will probably take you a year
or
2 years.
It's the same path, it's just a little bit faster.
Yeah, but if you're, like, I mean, if you've been desk bound your whole life and you haven't done any athletic stuff, yeah, you'll see the novice gains really quickly, but then, you know, you'll hit that wall and then you'll have to fight for everything. And it's just like, wouldn't you rather spend the time that you have to dedicate to that doing something that's more enjoyable? And more towards your flavor.
Yeah. I think it depends on, like you said earlier, just what... Well, first we have to establish, like, what the goal is. Like, what do you want, right?
Yep.
And if it's just to do parkour and do it pretty sustainably, or maybe even not that sustainably. You're just in it for a while, you know. Or
yeah, doing parkour not sustainably is an option.
It is an option.
We wouldn't recommend it, but it's an option.
But it's very similar to like you know, other taxing things on your body. Like there are plenty of martial artists who you can see fight in the UFC who are not clean, you know, figuratively and physically, who are horrible mobility, who don't look beautiful when they fight, who don't move with any grace, but get the job done and win. Mm-hmm. And that, so it is absolutely not necessary to have mobility, to have grace, to have perfect form. And oftentimes when we would watch, even in speed comps, I remember when we were doing a lot of speed comp stuff with Ryan and the Apex squad at that time, there was tons of athletes who we'd watch on film. They're beautiful, beautiful lines, right? Like there's a speed courses. They'd just be gorgeous. Like it's real good extension, soft landings. They'd be smooth. They could excel and decel with all this grace. And somebody who looked like they should have had a slower time would win, right? Sometimes there's still just like getting the job done and that's it. So I think the next thing you said was, you know, it kind of depends on what you want your style to be. And that is, even in style, you don't need to have a ton of mobility, but I think it would probably benefit to, it gives you more options, right? It gives you more options. But if you want to be someone, like for me, I enjoy looking at my movement and other movement, and I like to see the quality, and I would describe the quality as some of those elements, right? Mm-hmm. Is in sort of like, there seems to be some sort of attention and mastery to the movement, and there's some grace there, and those are components that I look like, or look at. I don't necessarily always look like that. But I'll even look at my stuff, dude. Like, I'll watch my strides, and even though my hands don't have, I'll be like, oh, there's too much wrist dorsiflexion. Like, I'll watch my arm swing, and I'll be like, I pulled my knuckles back too much. Like, I'll, well, yeah. I do a jump, like just like a little bit of a pull like that, you know? And not quite like that, but Jesse's got like a Nordic track on his arms, which is great. He kind of looks like one of those flappers from the 20s, right? Yeah,
what was that called, that exercise machine? The
Gazelle?
Yeah, the Gazelle.
The Gazelle.
You can look at it. It was fun.
The answer, I think, there is what is it that you want, and not being monolithic about what parkour should look like and what we should do. If you're just following trends, then it's not super trendy right now, with the exception of maybe some people who are doing the more split squat work.
I feel like you either fall into two tracks right now in parkour. You either fall into the like micro, the like very myopic view of like training, where you spend so much time doing all of this like dialed in work on joints and maybe some strength work and some mobility work, and you never actually do parkour. Right, like maybe you go out and you do some vaults and stuff like that, but you never actually, you push yourself in this realm and you never push yourself in the actual sport
itself. You spend all your time in the garage and you're never on the track.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's right? a common trend across a lot of things, right?
A lot of sports, yeah. So I feel like you either fall into that one, or you spend so much time on the track and you only bring yourself to the garage to work on the car when something goes wrong.
When something goes wrong, right? If you're only training mobility, and by that we mean, I think we just go ahead and define that as strength through range of motion, because I don't care if you can like drop into the middle split, but you had no control on the way down. It's like nobody wants an elevator that only goes to the bottom floor at like
100 miles an hour.
Terminal velocity. It's like you can be able to stop at the different floors. There's other stuff to be done.
I like that example.
Yeah. So there's that attitude. So, and some of this is just education about mobility and range of strength and just what you can do with it. People just kind of walk around with what they have, assuming that that's it. Mm-hmm.
Are you, I know, like, I think on the train of the three of us, like, Travis is definitely the most gifted mobility-wise. And I certainly had to work for some of mine, but I'm definitely more gifted mobility wise as well. Justin's definitely had to fight for most of his mobility gains as he's doing his
neck. Yep. He's sitting here doing his mobility right now, trying to work through his neck.
Yes.
I'm cursed. So what do you think? Do you think that's personality? Do you think that's, because you're generally, I think, more I don't know. Are you more relaxed than Jesse? Just as a personality type in some ways?
Yeah, he probably is.
I feel like Jesse's got a little more degaff to him. But you are just, you like things to be a little
degaff
more.
Degaff and relax are different things.
Yeah, really? Oh, for sure.
Degaff is almost YOLO life.
Indifference versus
chill. I don't give a fuck. It's like, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to do this.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then relax is just like, eh. I could do it. I could not. No.
That's why do you think you're more, just genetics?
Oh, yeah. I think I got cursed for sure. Because we were very active as kids. It's not like we like sat playing video games like all day. And I've seen kids who play video games all day still out mobile me. And who have never thrown a football in their life. But, you know, we were climbing, jumping on slides since as far back as I can remember.
And you did martial arts, so you would have been stretched in martial arts.
Yep. So, yeah.
You just got bad luck on that one.
Oh, yeah. Because, yeah, I remember having friends who, and, like, my best friend always out mobility me. But he just did baseball for high school. And so... And golf, so he's
pretty rough.
Shoulder development.
You've got a golfer and a baseball guy who beat you at mobility.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? In college, it was a different story. He had quite a bit of programming in college, but yeah, he's, and I feel like I've never had a chance against certain people. Mm-hmm. Where you never catch up, so.
Yeah, there are some people who seem to do better.
But there is, definitely had to focus on it, and there was definitely gains, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of squat mobility. Not sure about ankles. Ankles are tough, man.
They can be tough.
I don't know how. I don't know anyone who's really been I went from, you know, that plus one knee over toes index to anything over 3.
Yeah.
That's
a lot of range, though.
It's incredible, yeah. So, if you're out there, let us know what your secrets are.
What was your journey like?
But I think a lot of that stuff that has to do with that particular thing has to do with soft tissue and whatnot at early development. I think just when you're younger, having been in those positions and bone development and growing could have an impact on that. I won't, but I just think also when I watch you guys train deliberately, I feel like for stretching, Jesse just goes straight to the meat of it. He's just going to get in a middle split or a front split and load it up and get it. Where's your approach? Get it. And your approach is a little bit more you will spend a couple hours doing the ancillary movements and then go right into the stretch. What's your approach to training?
I'm usually mobility? Not trying to get the full stretch.
See where I think he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm definitely object oriented.
So like full splits?
If I come into do something, mobility wise, I'm that's my goal, so what's the minimum amount of time I have to spend to get there?
And I would say my approach is similar to that too. When I go in, I will look for ways to get to the point where I feel like if I know that I'm gonna do, if I was gonna come in and do a session where I was working on strength and I was gonna work towards a pancake or something like that, I would come in and I would do deep back squats just to get my hips super open down there in that position is as sort of the initial work, instead of spending a bunch of time in static anything or even doing loaded. I would do that before I did the weighted pancake, where you sit in a pancake position and put weights on your back and then do those bows, basically the pancake good mornings. And now I've done the seated good mornings. I really like those too. Those helped with the groin just to make you stronger. So I would say, go on. Did you have more to that?
Approach? No. Okay. That approach always worries me, though. That
one,
I feel like I'm going to get injured.
It is definitely a bit riskier.
If I go hard, especially weighted with flexibility, that one's a little scary.
But you wouldn't be afraid to do just a full range of motion back squat, right?
No, back squats would be different.
Okay, so yeah. that's what I'm saying, is that what I've learned is that until recently, I didn't realize how much just doing an effective, deep, good postured back squat, as far as because you have that PNF, right? The proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation, which is that active resistance and stretch reflex, and then relaxing to get get it to open up. But if you're doing it under load, you're also building strength at the same time. So you have that protection instead of just going to, I think what you're talking about, I would discourage, whereas people go to max end range and then hang on the end of that range and then load it. The journey for the range of strength is not considered in that position. I would also argue this is where isometric stance work comes in. So the stuff like isometric horse stance for mobility and for in the split squat, isometric split squat. Because you're at the end range, you're not overloading yourself because it's body weight, and you're spending time there, and that makes it very strong. When we would train in China, they would do work where you would work into that end range, but always those sessions were almost always finished with a strength exercise, like a ballistic strength exercise. So if we worked a bunch on, let's say, front split, then right after doing front split, we would stand up and do front kicks and work on pulling the foot down and queuing up the strength aspects of those. I guess that may be more power. But that was part of it. It was never like yoga, go stretch. I don't know. I'm not speaking for all yoga, but my general perception is people get into their end range of motion and they go and they drink coffee or have some.
And they hang out there for a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do like the idea that when you stretch, you like use it.
So right after. I think that's, arguably, I think that's the only way that you should ever be stretching, right? Is getting into that position and then actively getting into that position rather than just any sort of passive stretch. Like, I can't see a scenario other than like I'm bored where a passive stretch would do me any good on the athletic realm, right?
It can be maintained without, and you can certainly get it without with if you have the right body type and genetics. I would say that what's interesting in relationship to the feeling of pain and injury in those is, like with my front, my hip flexors have always been my tightest thing to work with. Posterior chain's been pretty good about range of motion, but the front and the anterior, like I will sit at home and it's just, my hip flexors are so tight that I can just do like a ballistic bounce. Like I use the parallel bars and just kind of lean, I'll be on my phone and I'll just like push my hips into my hip flexor and just bounce like that at night or whenever. And it feels like nothing to me because they're so tight. It's especially after a jumping day or a kicking day. Mm-hmm. It's just like I can hammer on those things. And they're very tough to get at. Like they're just a really tight, like a chuck steak or something like that. Like it's just not going anywhere. Whereas I get, dude, like if I get in my like middle split at end range of motion or even my front split at end range of motion and like feel like I'm tugging on filet mignon. Like it's right at your end range of motion. It's still something. There's such a huge lever between both heels or the ball of your foot and both heels and your body's in the middle of it and you're holding that weight with, you know, your hamstring. And even though my hip flexor really is the thing that needs to open up in that front split, my hamstring always takes it, or the back of my knee always takes it, because it's just isometrically for me, it's harder to build on. So I think that that's one of the reasons I've started working a little bit more on Nordics, which I've noticed I really suck at Nordics. But I mean, they're freaks who don't. They're so freaks. You see some of those kids that, like one of our students, Will, he just does Nordics, and you're just like, what, dude? Like, you received a gift from the gods, and you don't even know it, right? But for me, I can't even, like, oh, for me, it's terrible. I've been working on them for a while now, and I had to start working on them with the standing ones. So that's now the ones I have, like, kids and adults do in my class, just as, like, one to work on, where they're standing, and then you take, so you're standing your feet together, like, in a deadlift position, and then you take your, if you're watching the video, I'll show people. If you're taking, you take something with a brace on.
Yeah, that booty view.
Get it. And then you put the knee that you're flexing on the side that you're working the hamstring. So if you're working your right leg hamstring, your right leg will be behind your left leg, meaning your right knee is behind your left knee. Like you could fit a stick in between. Sorry, Justin, I just kicked you. And so then you pull like that. Like I had to start there with my Nordics again. Even though my hamstrings really feel pretty strong from kicks and stuff, that's where I had to start, through that full range. It wasn't through the full range. It's the last bit that gets me.
Interesting.
So are you guys trying Nordics at all right now?
I do them pretty regularly. Yeah, okay. It's part of like a deadlift cycle.
Do you have like any eccentric or anything, or what's your status on them? Do you feel good about them? Or
I can do an eccentric pretty much to the floor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It hurts a lot. But yeah, I can't reverse. I have to do like a fingertip initiate. And then I can pull myself up probably 3/4 of the way, but it looks a lot like this.
Yeah. With arms. That's okay.
And it's painful. I don't have a mirror on that side of my like basement.
Right.
It's behind me. So I don't see my face, but I'm certain that it looks like somebody's.
That's the only reason I look horrible in hats. Terrible in hats. I'm just like, some people are just not hat guys. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely one of those. Justin, yeah. You're not a hat guy, right? No. Yeah. And I would always wear hats to the gym for like shrugs and exercises like that, just so I could turn it around so you couldn't see like my lip quiver as I like went through the lift. People out there are gonna be like, yup, that's me, that's why I wear a hat in the gym. I just pull it. If you ever see a dude like in front of a mirror with a hat like down, it's not because he's determined, it's because if you look at his face, it's like I would be rolling one direction and the other, and the lip would look like he's having like a stroke or something.
Yeah, so I'm certain that's my face in the Nordic for sure.
Yep.
But
it's good you don't look at it.
It's painful.
It's a weird pain. I don't understand. It's such why a weird pain. That one is such a, and it's like you just can't find that pain in any other exercise.
Like I've never been disemboweled, but I imagine.
It straight up feels like somebody just roundhoused me like right in the butt.
Oh,
like, you feel right in the back thighs, like.
Oh yeah, no, I get it right.
Like that's like, and then my thigh just cramped up. Like that's kind of what the Nordic feels like the entire time.
Oh my gosh, it is literally like.
I do notice though a lot of people do their Nordics like this.
Mm-mm. And yeah, where they're bending at the hips.
Squeeze those cheeks.
Yeah, that's super important. Is that if you are practicing the Nordic and you're doing a concentric side, the concentric side of it, the load into it. You begin with the glutes flexed because that's really going to ensure that the posterior chain, which is what you're working, is active, and that's where the emphasis is. And so you want to squeeze the glutes.
Squeeze those cheeks.
Yeah.
Squeeze them at the top.
Ben Patrick,
keep them squeezed.
Had a really good video on that just recently, you know, talking about the Nordics and how to do glute flexion to initiate the concentric, which you can use your hands, you know, little fingertips like that. And then when you come back down, you're just trying to like hold on to that posterior flexion for as long as you can. For me, mine are so bad, which it's just neglect, right? Mine are so bad that if, actually they're not terrible because I'm just saying relative to where I think they should be, is that I can still initiate the eccentric, which is coming back down. So the Nordic is you're lying prone on the ground and then you squeeze your glutes and you pull at your hamstrings and you come up from your knees, like bending over backwards, right? Or similar. And then when you go back down, you should try and stay straight as long as you can with your glutes flexed. But I can start initially straight and then still bend at the hips, and there's still enough of a pull on my hamstrings that they still kill on the way down. Like I don't even have to maintain that because they're already like starting to cramp up. So I'd say it's probably my weakest point, to be honest, is Nordics.
Pretty gross.
But I mean, for most people. It's
like... But Nordics aren't really like a... They're not really like a range of motion thing. They're more of like a strength and power exercise. I suppose to a degree, they're kind of range of motion, but
yeah, I think
if that's your range of motion, you might just want to do some good mornings instead. Like if you're like, I need to do them to like increase my hamstring flexibility, you should probably just do some good mornings.
I think that as your hamstrings become stronger, you have more strength and to work with, and you have more control in like those front or those front splits. But you're right. Like if you like good mornings or Jefferson curls rather are probably a better approach to increasing that range of strength than those. But to make you for power athletes, yeah,
they good.
Like if you want to fire off the ground and have that nice like pony little kick as you come off your strides, you kick like a gazelle. You need a hamstring like no other.
That's true. What do you guys think is like the
dude with the hat, man?
I'm thinking like, what are your like the top three mobility focuses that you just see come up all the time on your feeds or in your like athletic circles?
You mean like students that like things people should be working on, or like the gold, or what are you
talking about? Either ones that you just see people are just like hung up on,
like
some
dogmas?
Sort of fad or something, or the ones, whether right or not, like the ones that you feel like these are the ones I should be focused on. Like, I can think of my big three, but I feel like
this. Okay, let's do three you should stop and three you should start.
Deal. Knee mobility. Does anybody do that? If you do, don't.
What do you mean by knee mobility?
I don't know.
What's a knee mobility exercise?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Like if that exists.
Kelly Starrett kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like.
That's what I would say. see. Yeah, I see a lot of people like smashing their calves and their quads, and
because they have knee pain. Uh huh. Yeah, I mean, it, general like PT theory would tell you that like if your knee hurts, it's not your knee that's the problem. Like it's probably your ankles or your hips.
That's so. The ART, the active release stuff. The and then there's the like myofascial.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean that's not really mobility, but like that's a joint that.
So I would say that stuff is just like one part of the meal, right? I feel like that's what people are doing is they're going through the PT stuff, but they're not doing like real. Well, like as you could have a PT who would prescribe it, but if you're just foam rolling and sitting on a lacrosse ball, like it might just be fun for you. Like it could be making you feel better, but it's just one piece of the pie. I feel like that you can't on that alone, you can't truly grow and get better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I think that's a faux pas. That's one.
So I mean, that's kind of a miscategory, knee mobility, but yeah, that would be mine. It's like you're like so focused on the knee because it hurts you for whatever reason, rather than really looking upstream or downstream for where that issue has originated. Mm-hmm. So I mean, my don't. You guys got one?
For don'ts, I really think that something that's super hot right now is, and I've been seeing this for a while, I think I've even trained them for a while, is those glute, like hip thrusters on the like bench and stuff.
Like barbell thrusts?
Yeah, like barbell thrusts.
Oh yeah, do people do those for mobility though? Those are more like a strength gain, and I'm like just.
I've seen them now as like, it's like a solely female glute development exercise.
Right, if you were just like, I'm just gonna do that on a machine. Okay, so maybe that's not a good one for mobility faux pas. I would say the next one that I see that's super common.
So we'll go with, yeah, to summarize, number one, instead of me miscategorizing as like knee mobility, we'll go with like just like the obsession with foam rolling.
And smashing.
It feels good. I'm mm-hmm. not going to lie. It feels like it, good, I only do it because I like the way it feels. Not because I expect that I'm actually going to get any real benefit out of it.
I have had some flossing and stuff like that. Or the BFR, the blood flow restriction stuff, have a little bit of an effect of...
Well, like, BFR is a bit different, but yeah.
Making things. But even if you like are doing the flossing, like the putting a band around the knee and then doing squats and stuff like that to sort of stretch out some of that stuff more passively, then yeah, I just feel like a lot of that stuff for me is after the fact of injury or just like trying to get into loading stuff when I'm recovering. It's recovery stuff. I think I would say that. I don't do that regularly and I'm fine.
Basically. So far.
Yeah, so far.
We could be wrong. There's always the possibility that we're wrong.
I'm almost 40, so I'm pretty sure that.
Pretty sure that you've got it. You've got anecdotal.
Yeah, I'm 38, so like I feel like by now, if something was going to like gobble up my knees, then I would have figured it out or been hurt by it seriously. That's true. But you could also argue that the mobility is what's somewhat kept me functioning in that way.
It's true. So one, stop squishing your meat. Number two,
yep, quit that. You go blind. I just feel like static stretching, although never doing static stretching, I think is something that isn't necessarily something that should be like I'll just never stretch.
We won't commit a dogmatic response to a dogma. Yeah,
but exactly. But I would say that people who are only static stretching, especially before training, it's just like you're behind on, or you're derailed by that idea.
You're working on 90s sports science.
Yep.
Yeah, they're just benchmarks. They're useful for those presidential awards and middle school PE class.
Same JFK, right? Yep. Exactly. So I would say that, I would say like nonsensical static stretching, or just like static stretching with the hope it's going to do something that it may not, right? Is probably the next
thing. I do like that though, is like static stretching is as like benchmark, right? Like when you wake up and you walk to your kitchen, you make your coffee, you sip your coffee, and then you're like, okay, what's my real, like, range of motion for, we'll just take the middle splits, right? Like, that would be a good time to determine what your real range of motion is, right? Without warming up.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all know that after warm up and, like, after having done some stuff, you're going to get some extra range of motion.
It's
but that's not like, yeah, but that's not how you go about your day to day, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't warm up and do this big old warm up and, like, get everything all prepped and hot and ready to go to work, unless you work where we
and when, even as I work here at the gym, I think that a lot of it matters is my mind in the game of doing what I'm about to do. That's what it feels like. Like, am I psyched up to do something? Because when I'm teaching, I will do way more stuff, because I will not be in front of a student and then talk about an example of something and then just not go and do it.
Yeah.
And I oftentimes will do things where I'm like, oh, wow, that worked out really well. You know, when if I'm just training on my own, I just got distracted by something else and I come in and I'm like, oh, maybe I should stretch a little bit before I do this and stuff like that. Almost always my performance is the best in front of my students. So on the fly.
Yeah. So static is a nice, I like that, like, benchmark, if you will, mm-hmm. of where your current range of motion just sits.
Middle split's tough with that. Like, for me, getting in my lowest range on middle split, it can happen when I'm, like, really, I need a lot of adrenaline. I remember I used to do performances on stage for, like, martial arts stuff, just in general, like, theaters or whatever. We'd go for some of the martial arts schools I was in when I was younger. And always I could come into that and just with, like, almost no warm-up and just adrenaline get into, like, splits. Just because you're just psyched up. And you just go into splits. But,
yeah,
kind of like that.
Go for
it. Usually be choreography or in a form or something like that.
Yeah. So number two is static stretching with the hopes that it's going to get you something. It's like digging in the backyard for gold without any data to back it up. Just digging.
Can't just stay. Can't just stay. Do less with it.
You got a third? Anybody got a third?
We can stick with two and go with what we should do.
Yeah, usually don't. I actually don't see too many people on my social media feed doing mobility stuff. If I do, I must be zooming past them. But yeah, I've seen so many people saying so many different things. It's just like, well, it's gonna work for someone at some point in time.
Ooh, I got it.
That's a good point.
I got one.
You know what really gets my goat
is inflexible people talking about flexibility or mobility. Like, when I scroll through a feed and I see, like, a 24-hour fitness coach who's talking about all these like this multi-pronged approach to mobility, who clearly has no mobility.
Well, that's not really like a practice thing. That's just a peep.
I know, but I'm saying, like, I've never gone to, I just see these people who are following that line of thought who have 20 tools to mobility and no progress. It's like they are tinkering to their own demise. They're very busy, but not very productive.
That's true. And not doing a lot. I think my third would be like a focus on isolation so much, right? Like, people that are like, oh, I need overhead mobility, so I'm gonna put my body in this compression sack and lock my arm down in this, like, anchored padlock joint, and then have somebody come in and, like, articulate just my scap, not my delts, not my traps, just the scap. And they're just gonna grab it with some vices and just, like, and I'm like, whenever do you move just your scapula doing anything? Or when do you ever move just one joint or one part of your body when doing absolutely anything? You don't even do that when you're sleeping. When you roll over, you're using all sorts of stuff.
And so you prefer the more compound, the bigger mobility?
Yeah. So not to say, like, if you want overhead mobility, do overhead squats. Like, right? Uh-huh. Like, there does need to be a little bit of focus there. But I feel like a lot, it's so easy for people to be like, oh yeah, just like my subscapularis is just so tight, so, like, I just need to get in there, you know, and, like, do these band things.
Yeah. Right?
And I'm like, look, if you have an injury and your PT is now have to, like, your subscap tore, and you now have to, like, they put it back together and now you have to rebuild that one muscle, everything else is fine. That's a different story, right? Coming back from an injury looks a lot different than preventing one, even though a lot of the times I feel like people treat them the same, right? You'll see people doing, like, wrist exercises as if they had wrist surgery. And I'm like, that's not quite, like, those things are different. Those should be different approaches and they shouldn't look the same coming back from an injury as it is preventing it. So I think people who are focused so much on isolation is they're missing the bigger picture and they're just wasting time.
Yeah, I think that a metaphor I kind of was dreaming up while you were talking about that is like we're all on the same trail. Like we're trying to climb the mountain, right? And you get injured and all of a sudden you think there's a different way up the mountain. And you get off to this on the side trails and you're messing with your equipment and you're tinkering with your toys and everyone else is just sort of marching, but you have this idea that there's something wrong with your equipment and you have to fix it. And the real work isn't just getting back up the downhill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so people get, they frame things as a pathology. They frame it as an illness. And once they have that mindset, they think that their journey is somehow different than everyone else's. Now, it's different in the sense, don't get me wrong, it's different in the sense that you have this obstacle to overcome, which is some sort of injury or some sort of like challenge. But there are plenty of people on the trail working who are just unaware of their issues. And so they're just doing work and making progress.
Yeah.
And no one's told them that they have a problem. Like, I had a teacher one time, you know, tell me when I was working with somebody, I can't remember what it was, going on, but the guy like had an injury or something. He's like, he's already got one disease, which is the actual issue that he has. Don't give him another disease, which is thinking that he has a disease. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so some of it's honesty and some of it's just like getting hyper focused on an aspect of your injury or in a challenge and then not letting it go. A beautiful thing happened just yesterday. And I wanted to tell the story. This is a perfect lead in for it with Nova, my daughter, who's just turned 10 today. Today's her birthday, 10 years old.
I asked Carly to remind me. I even texted her yesterday. I said, tomorrow is Nova's birthday. I'm reminding you to remind me.
Yep. It's his birthday day. It is. And we had just finished watching the last season of Legend of Korra over the last month or something like that. And she had been playing Animal Jam, which is this like game where you go and you have those little critters, right? And
on like a phone?
Yeah. Yeah, she's been playing on
iPad. She's got all sorts of funky little games. Yeah. Right? She showed me all of them.
Friends on there. She's building up these characters, got all these like pets and critters, learning about, you know, trade and how to get not to get hustled, trading your little animals with other like players so
it's
online.
It's like the iOS free version of Animal Crossing.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Exactly. And so she lost this collection of animals she was working on for like 2 years because whatever reason, right? So deleted it, lost the account, right? I love that she's having these lessons at a young age. And I was like, oh man. I'm like, are you sad about it? Like, and she's like, no. She's like Korra, I just accepted it and let it go. And I was just like, I was like, that is awesome. I was so proud of her. And she was, you could tell she was like, we just watched that episode where like she was having to deal with her PTSD and Zahir.
Zahir's.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And so she remembered that lesson of like Korra going to meet Zahir and let go of her trauma and in order to get back into the spirit world, right? So she would like remember that. She's like, no.
Losing her farm.
Yep. She's like, I've already accepted it.
Her digital farm.
I'm like, are you sad about it? She's like, I couldn't sleep last night, right? You could tell she like lost sleep over it. It was just on her mind.
And then she
let it go. And I was like, oh.
She was just like,
that's legit, right? Had to go. No. So, again, that was so cool. I learned who the voice of Zahir was.
Who?
It's this guy, Henry Rowling or something like that. He's actually on my favorite episode of Portlandia. I've made two Portlandia references in this one. Do you remember the Riot Spray episode? Hmm. It's the episode where these guys who are older have started this like renewed their like punk band because they're just against the system. They're just like, yeah, just like just resist, right? You know, and they're like in their basement and they're gonna move to Canada because they're just sick of America. And like they've made this punk band, and he's in that episode because he used to do this 80s punk band. He's also like, yeah, really cool guy. Like if you looked at that episode and watched him, you'd be like, oh, that guy is such a cool pick for Zahir. Yeah, so I thought, go back and watch the Riot Spray episode. I feel like that's very relative to what's going on right now and sort of like culturally for us too, is this idea that people are like, I'm going to Canada. You know, it's because they're sick of stuff and they want to get out.
That's true.
That's what that entire episode jokes about and makes fun of. And then Terry Crews talks them back into staying in America.
And the going, so the going to Canada, Terry Crews.
Yes.
The going to Canada then equivalent would be like, I'm going to ignore every aspect of my athletic training and just focus on yoga.
Isn't that just like
unless
giving up, which was the message of the episode? Yeah.
Yeah. So in summary, what we have? We have one was foam rolling, squishing your meat. Gross.
Yeah, don't do
it. It's just the easiest way to summarize it. Stop squishing your meat.
There's too much of it.
There's too much meat squishing, all right? All right. Two was, what do we have for two? I already forgot.
Was that the other one we came up with? Was just like
prevention.
I know, we were talking about flexit. We were talking about static stretching.
Static stretching.
That's with, right. Yeah, as a means of... As
static stretching is a benchmark. Is a benchmark, not an athletic journey. It's like, it's not going to get you there.
Yeah. Just get in it.
Loaded progressive.
Or just get in it.
Or just do something that has that...
That's
good. That range of motion in it. You'll get there faster and you'll have more fun doing it. And then three was, don't be so myopic.
Right.
Focused on like a singular joint. Unless that joint is at a significant deficit or you're coming back from an injury. Those are the only times.
Just get back on the trail, man.
Yeah. Like if you're a pitcher, to use our friend, and you have an extreme range of motion on your right arm, but not so much on the left, that imbalance may benefit you to dial in and focus on the left shoulder. But otherwise, if you're just a run-of-the-mill human, you really don't have imbalances that matter that much, right? Also, like, we all have one leg that's longer than the other. We all are a little bit more flexible on one side or a little stronger on one arm. And those things are okay. You don't need to fix those before you go and try and do a back squat. Like, just do the friggin' back squat. Just jump on the box
with everything and play with your kids. Right, exactly. I think that there are some scenarios where you're like a specific athlete that needs a specific trait. But people who work with high level athletes, their first lesson is don't break your athlete, right?
Yes.
So if you end up being like a pro athlete and go to see a trainer, you're going to expect that person is like, not going to be like, well, you should be doing deadlifts. Like, I've never done deadlifts before and I'm a pro athlete. Well, I need to keep you doing your job. Mm-hmm. And if I break you trying some new exercise and you've never deadlifted before, then that's immaturity in what's happening.
Which is why they put you on like the Russian method where they're like, here's a broomstick. Yeah. This is your deadlift for 6 months.
Or trap bar is really good because it's less, there's less risk in the trap bar than a regular deadlift.
So they'll introduce you in that way. But yeah, I mean, professional athletes and professional athletes trainers are kind of a different category, right? Like they know what they need to dial in on, and sometimes they will focus on something specific, but that's because it's sports specific.
It's goal, right? And it's your journey. Like if your job requires that you are a pro parkour athlete for some reason, I cannot break your jumps trying to get you the splits.
And that's a high possibility when you have an athlete who's performing at the top in a power sport or a strength sport. Giving them extra range of motion can absolutely, because you take it's like if you have a glass of water and that the glass represents their range of motion and the water represents their power output, and then you give them a bigger glass, well, now they, in proportion to their range of motion, that power doesn't go anywhere, right? It doesn't get them where it needs to go.
You could also, I mean, something you could do in an off season or something like that. And definitely when you're doing the range of strength stuff, like, oh, who was it that just talked flexible on Instagram? I was just listening to a rant that he had about training athletes. He was saying like, look, you're only like the average NFL athlete is only competing for 3 years. So that's not sustainable.
Yeah.
But you know, if you come into that or on your off season, your work is on gaining a range of strength. It's going to extend your career. Like if you look at older, look at George, like St. Pierre, JSP and MMA, look at like, I think Anderson Silva is another good example of this. Older athletes, like these are guys in their late 30s, maybe even early 40s, who are still fighting at a competitive pro level. Kung Lee, like you look at some of these fighters, those dudes have like, they have mobility, like they have range of strength. These guys have the splits. They have these things that give them a broader range of bulletproofing. And that may be the difference between the tighter athlete who still gets the job done and the person who has more sustainable training. That's the point I would really like to make, is that if you really want sustainability in parkour, you must have range of strength that, you know, presents as mobility or flexibility. I just don't think that you're going to see a lot of people who are training older who don't have a little bit of that, or they're just going to be very confined as to what they do. they just won't, they won't play young as young. Like, you see some people who can play really young who are older. They have some mobility usually, or they're just not going outside of that.
Or they just don't, they have like a disconnect.
And I would say as far as splits goes, and we had this I had this conversation with somebody, I can't remember who it was, but in Wushu, because the applications were different, we weren't as focused on the middle split because it's very aesthetic in nature. We weren't as focused on that. Front split, everybody had to have.
Yeah, but it was always on one leg. So there's pretty substantial imbalance there.
You would in your forms, you would do it on one leg, but it was very super rare to find somebody who only had front split on one side, and the other side was like, there was some huge deficit. They'd be like, oh, my right side's tighter than my left, but there are a couple things in Wushu that were trained symmetrically, and that would be splits. So you would only see it present on one side of your right, though.
Yeah.
Like in forms and Taolu, you would jump it inside 540 to split, or B twist to split would almost always be
right leg forward.
Right leg forward. Yeah. The only except, but you would also have an aerial split, and that would be, oh no, that's left leg forward. B twist to split is left leg forward, and so is jump inside 540 to split.
Yeah, because left twisting was dominant, right?
Yep, left, mandatory.
Oh, that's right.
Really?
Mandatory. Yeah, the Chinese don't care. Even in school, they're like, oh, you're left-handed? That's cute. Start writing with your right. Like, everyone's taught a particular way. Now I think that floats a little bit differently, but there's plenty of people I remember being like, oh, I'm left-handed, but I was forced to write with right to learn calligraphy or whatever it is.
It's very difficult teaching both sides.
Yeah, you do have some right twisting though, because the jump outside is a right twisting motion in Wushu, and there are some right twisting activities, and you do learn to twist in your warm up left and right, like just jump spin, like 360 jumps or even 540 jumps are taught on both sides. So you at a very basic level can do both sides, and all the basic kicks are on both sides, but it's just like in parkour, all your basics are on both sides. But if you power stride, meaning like you're gonna go for like max effort, you probably have a dominant side.
Yeah, a preferential side.
You have a preferential side for that, for sure. So I think front split is something that people should aspire towards. It may not be the biggest goal, but if you're a general practitioner and you're intermediate to advanced level as an athlete, it's one of those things that just is cool to work at. And it's definitely not. It's not gonna hurt you, and if anything, it's gonna make your strides, you know, the gait of your stride is bigger if you have a full extension in the hip.
Yep. Yeah. If you want to stride farther, just increase your range of motion. Mm-hmm. You reach a little farther.
They get these little legs in your strides versus like somebody who's like, boom, yeah, right? Yeah. You know that's it. Like, yep. Especially
even if at full splits, we match Tim Champion's standard stride.
You're talking about our actual length of our
I'm
legs.
Talking about my actual length of fever, exactly.
He's in like a casual stride and you're in full split.
Full splits like a gymnast Olympian, and she's like hit the full 180. That's me and his stride like the same.
Freaking strides.
The only good thing is that it just makes smaller jumps look just a little bit bigger on camera if you got little legs.
It does, dude. Like everything, tell me about it. I do something to me that's challenging. Like my torso is still moving, right? And like at that distance, and then you look at my legs and like, dude, that jump doesn't look like anything for him. But I still have to displace my weight.
Yeah,
like
that's me laughing. You guys.
Yeah, I know, but you do like a 3-foot gap.
Like, oh,
and it looks
I'm sorry.
Like 10.
Did your girlfriend tell you to stand up straight while you're walking through the high school hallway? No. All right.
We'll do a trauma episode for you on height, I think.
Well, I did see there was one guy I trained with in Canada, and he was shorter than me, and he could stride further than Amos, and it was one of the coolest things, because just like the jumps were big to anyone's standard, but watching him do them, it was just like, phew, I forgot
so what's,
this guy's name.
What's shorter than you?
He was like 5'4", I think. So he's just a
5'4", but doing like 6-foot person strides.
6-foot person strides, yeah. Yeah, they're like 8-foot strides, so I mean, they're decent try. I can't hit 8 foot on a rail, but so it looks so good.
It does look pretty cool. There is some benefit. That's on the stylistic on the stylistic side, the little guys do have a bit of an advantage, except when it comes to like layout flips, because like
you just and then stuff in person too. I feel like on camera it really does it just looks better
on
camera, like shorter extremities and with wide, it looks better. Mm-hmm. But in person, when you see like a 6 foot person do a just really long like B twist and stuff, it's just like they fill the room. Looks so
crazy. Yeah, there's something about like the magnitude and the weight, like you just feel gravity, whether it's you actually feel like the shock of them landing or something. I don't know, but there is certain those what was our competition here and the track star guy, what was his name again?
From Apex. Julian.
Julian, yeah. That's how I felt watching him.
Yeah.
I was like, dang.
Yeah, because he's tall, former like D3 guy, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he was a D1 athlete.
D1 or D1, what's all the activities?
What's all the activities? All the activities. Sports?
No.
You mean like in track?
Yeah, you're a decathlon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Decathlon.
Yeah,
I think that's what he was. But he's very cool to watch. We need higher ceilings just to bring him back.
I know.
Yeah, he's so tall. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in on our episode about mobility and our opinions and thoughts. If you have some magical ankle mobility recipes, we'd love to hear them, or just really about anything. So thanks for tuning in. If you're listening to us, you can watch us on YouTube. If you are watching us on YouTube and you're on the run, you can get us on any of your major podcast platforms.
Spotify.
Spotify is the nicer one.
Yeah,
but Justin likes Apple Podcasts.
Oh, I listen to Apple Podcasts too. Either.
Freaking nerd. Spotify. You can comment your preference on that one too. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. We'll catch you next time.